What?
All right, so we are holding on Ayin Amud Bey's last line of the narrow lines. All right, so Ayin Amud Bey. Okay, so we mentioned in the Mishnah that you have a case where an animal's unborn baby died in the womb. A shepherd reached in and then touched the baby. Is he Tomei or not? The Tanakhama said either way he's Tahor, and Rabbi Yossi had said if it's a Tomei animal, then he's Tomei. So we've been discussing the basis for Rabbi Yossi Agrivi's shita. Why does he distinguish between a Tomei animal and a Tahor animal? In the case of the Tanakhama, we said that we started saying for the Tanakhama, you have a Kavachomer that tells us it shouldn't be Matame, if it's even mutter with the mother's shita, how much more so that it shouldn't be Matame to Mas Nevela. As far as how that applies to a Behemoth Tzneya, we said because we have a Hekish, which refers to a Behemoth Tzneya and a Behemoth Tahor.
With a what we didn't before that mentions?
So we had a Kavachomer to say that it applies.
This is a Behemoth.
That's a Behemoth Tahor. How do we know it applies to a Behemoth Tzneya? That's why you have a Hekish. Okay, whereas Rabbi Yossi Agrivi is learning from a pasuk that says v'chol ho'lach ha'kapov v'chol ha'chaya ha'ilach ha'sodoma, also in Parashat Shemini, that he learns it to be saying, any creature that walks on its paws, meaning that does not walk on split hooves, that v'chol ha'chaya, in any living creature that walks on four, in other words, if the mother and the baby both have four rather than eight points of contact with the ground, then the baby, when it's dead, is metame, even though it's in the womb. So we said in that case, so now when you consider, you have four possibilities. You can have a behemoth tahora which walks on eight points of contact with the ground, and whose baby also does, so that would be excluded, and therefore it wouldn't be metame. We said, what about if the mother has eight points of contact, but the baby only has four, because the baby is a kolut? We said that nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi Agrivi would agree it's not metame because the baby only has four, but the mother has eight. And we said it has to be the baby and the mother have four. So then we said, what about the other way around? Okay, so if it's a non-kosher animal, such as a camel, if its baby is a normal camel and also has four points of contact, sure, it's metame. What about if it's a deformed one that has fully split hooves, which a normal camel doesn't? So there we said we had an extra thing, because the pasuk doesn't just say ho'lach ha'kapov, it says v'chol ho'lach ha'kapov, so we have an extra thing to learn about that case. What about if the mother and the baby are kosher species? They're both, there's a cow that's pregnant with a baby, and both of them are kolot. So both of them are kolot. So we said also he would say it's not matame, because ultimately, after all, we do have the kavachomer. He would agree that we do use the kavachomer to say that if the baby's not matame. Not the kavachomer, not b'chol. The b'chol tells us the other way around. If you have a non-kosher mother and a non-kosher baby, but the baby has four, the baby has split hooves, the baby walks on eight, because the baby is like a parah in having eight, even though it's carried now by a camel, so we have the behol teaches us that also that would be matami, says Rabbi Yossi Agrivi. But if you have both the mother and the baby are a kosher species, but they happen to be kolot, they happen to have that same mutation that makes them kolot, fine, but nevertheless, that's where you have the kavachomer. The baby would be mutter to eat once you shef the mother, because kolot doesn't make neither the animal nor neither the mother nor the baby trefa. So therefore, if it's not, if you're even allowed to eat it when you shech the mother, kavachomer shouldn't be metame to mitzvah.
What kolot means?
Kolot means that the hooves are joined together. Instead of being split, you have it like one rounded thing. Like
because the Torah says split hooves, period. It
that's fine.
Whether it's abnormality or not.
No, but that's the point. Kurl mafresis parasa means if it's a species, that's mafresis parasa.
That.
Because that's how it is. Like, we're talking about it elsewhere. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that... Okay, right now, that's not the point. The point is that so far, that's what we're saying. If the mother is of a species that walks on four, and the baby is of a species that walks on four, then it's matame. If not, then not. But now comes the question, maski flora bachadboy bar ami, chazir b'me'e chazir to lo latame. By your logic, you should say that if you have a mother chazir and carrying a baby chazir, Then if the baby is dead, it shouldn't be metame. The mahalcha shmoed and mahalcha shmoinahu, because there you have both the mother and the baby walk on eight. And yet, Rav Yosef Aglieli had just said in the Mishnah, b'tmei of tome over tahor of tahor, without distinguishing between a chazir and any other species. So that can't be the source for Rav Yosef Aglieli's din, because otherwise he would have to, just, if it's strictly a difference between four and eight, then he would have to be distinguishing between a chazir and other species. Okay. Ela Omer of Nachmeitz. So rather, of Nachmeitz says, I'll give you a different way how Rav Yosef Aglieli learns his din. Yeah, mehocha. You learn it from a pasuk as follows. Not the pasuk in Shmini that we were talking about before, but rather a pasuk in Parshas Vayikra.
So we cannot learn from Shmini.
We can't learn from Shmini because you have the problem of the chazir, right? Okay. So the pasuk says like this: Nefesh kisiga b'chol tame. If a person touches anything which is tame, oy b'nivlas chayat meya, or if he touches the dead body of a tame chaya, such as, for example, a lion. Or the dead body of a behemoth, which is tame, for example, a chazir or a horse. Or he touches the body of a dead sheret, such as a lizard. Now, they have to ask the question, why does it mention only chayatmeya or behemotmeya? When it comes to a nevela, what's the difference? A nevela of a horse is metame, a nevela of a cow is also metame. So why is the pasuk specify? Yeah, nevela is nevela. So why is the pasuk mentioning only chayetz meyer or behemetz meyer? Ella, ezeh. So no, we have to say, what is the pasuk referring to? What is this pasuk? Nefesh kisiga, oy benivlas chayetz meyer, etc. What is it referring to? The uber. It's not referring to a regular living animal. It's referring to a baby still in the womb. Otherwise, you don't need this pasuk, but why is it mentioning only behemoth meya and chayat meya? So therefore, it's specifically referring to a baby in the womb. That if we're talking about a tome species, then the baby is tome, and it's matame the person who touches it over to her, that's her. Okay, so that clarifies everything. Now we don't need all the answers we gave before about kolot and not kolot and gummel and para and chazer and everything. Now it's very straightforward.
Just because of the chazer.
Yeah. Okay, but the problem now is, okay, well then if we learn it from Rav Nachmei, from Nefesh Kisiga B'chol Tameh, then why do we have Rav Yitzchak's pasuk? What are we doing with the pasuk kol ha'lecha kaplov b'chol ha'chaya ha'lecha salarva?
It's
also a pasuk in the Torah. But the point is, on the surface, what the Gemara is asking is just exactly that. What are we doing with that pasuk? So the Torah Chaim explains in a little more detail. We didn't actually say that when we said Ela Amar of Nachmi Yitzchak, we're not necessarily going back on the concept that Rabbi Yosef really is using that pasuk. We're going back on all of the explanations that we started giving, that we're learning from the word Bechol, and that we're using the Kal V'Chomer, and this and that, and whatever. That we ended up, we can't do that, because then we're still left with the problem of the Chazir. But Rabbi Yosef really may well be using the pasuk Bechol Ha'olach HaKaplov for part of his din. But if we can learn the whole thing from Rav Nachmei Yitzchak's pasuk, why do we need Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk at all?
What he used.
That's the point. Why would Rabbi Yosef really need two pasukim to teach us the din? The answer
is something else.
That's what we have to figure out. The answer is that's the question. Once we have Rav Nachmei Yitzchak's pasuk, Rabbi Yitzchak Lomali, why do we need Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk? What are we learning from that? The answer is, Ilav de Rabbi Yitzchak, we do need both. Because if we didn't have Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk, b'chol ha'olach ha'kaplov, then have amina kulei l'chidrevi huda also. Then we would think like this. The pasuk that Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak is quoting, oy nefesh kisiga b'chol tameh, further on in the sugya, on ayin aleph on aleph, we have Rebbe learning something else from that pasuk. So then we would think, and ultimately, Rebbe is actually learning from a different phrase in that pasuk. He's learning from the word behemoth meyer. You have in the pasuk it mentions chayat meyer and behemoth meyer. So Rebbe is learning from behemoth meyer a different din. He uses it for zera shava, as we're going to get to soon. So therefore, if we only had Rav Nachman Yitzchak's pasuk nefesh kisiga b'chol tameh, we would say that has nothing to do with the din of whether when you touch the dead baby inside the womb, you become tame or you don't become tame. The whole pasuk is needed for Rebbe's din. Rebbe is only using one phrase of it. Rashi says it's a very common thing that the pasuk will repeat, that it's a very common thing. We find in various places in Shas that the Torah will mention, will repeat a concept and add one new detail that you wouldn't have otherwise known. we mentioned in the previous parak, for example, when we talked about the when we learned about the Ophis Tmeim, we said the whole list of them is repeated in is repeated from Parashat Shmini to Parashat Re'eh. But you have a couple of new names for ones that are added to teach us that whatever names you call them, to teach us something new. So the whole rest of the list on the surface is not needed, but it's meant only for that. So the same thing, if we didn't have the pasuk b'chol ha'lecha kapav, we would think that Rav Nachman Yitzchok's pasuk nefesh tisiga b'chol tameh, the whole purpose of that pasuk is to have in there the word behemoth tmeya, which is going to be used for Rebbe's zera shava. So now, Chamash Malan, therefore, Rav Yitzchok is telling us that you have the pasuk b'chol ha'lecha kapav. Fine, you're not learning everything from it, because ultimately you would end up in having to go through these various dechukim that we did before, and you'd wind up with the question, what do you do with the chazer and her baby? So therefore, the actual din we're learning from Rav Nachman Yitzchok's pasuk, nefesh tisiga. But we still need the pasuk for Chol HaHelecha Kapav to alert us. You should know there's something going on over here. You need to be aware that this pasuk is not only that part of it is being used for Rebbe Zera Shava, but part of it is being used to teach us about the tumah of the unborn baby of a behemoth man.
Nachman Bar Yitzchak doesn't use it himself.
That Rebbe, we're not talking about what Rebbe Nachman Yitzchak himself is using. We're trying to explain Rebbe Yosef Aglili's shita. Why does Rabbi Yosef Aglili, in our mission, distinguish between a behemoth tmeya and a behemoth tahora? So we have now two psukim that Rabbi Yosef Aglili is using as the basis for his din. He's using the pasuk b'chol ha'lecha kaplov, and he's also using the pasuk nefesh kisiga b'chol tameh. The combination of those two psukim tells us don't think the whole pasuk nefesh kisiga b'chol tameh is unnecessary except for the words behemoth tmeya that are being used for Zera Shava. Be aware the rest of it, in particular when it mentions chaya tmeya, is meant to be teaching us about an unborn chaya tmeya that is tameh. And then the pasuk b'chol ha'lecha kapav clarifies it further that it applies not only to a chaya, but it applies to any species that's not kosher. Most of the non-kosher species being ones that walk on four points of contact with the ground, but you have the chazer that walks on eight, and it's included in that as well, because it's included under Nivlas Chayas Meh or Nivlas Behemoth Meh.
If you learn from one pasuk, another
if you only had Nefesh Kisiga B'chol Tameh, then you would think that pasuk is not teaching us anything except for Rebbe's Zera Shava. And if you only had Kol HaHelecha Kaplav, then you would think you have to distinguish between a chazer and other kinds of non-kosher animals. So therefore, you need both of them. Okay. So that's it. Kamash Malan. So that's why the pasuk tells. That's why we have the two pesukim. Rabbi Yitzchak Levi said. Okay. Fine. Tanya, we learn in a brisa more on this topic. Omer Rav Yonasan, Namti loy leben Azai. I said to Ben Azai, Namti, you have all over Tanakh, you have the expression Ne'um Hashem, for example. So Namti is from the same Shurish, basically. It means I spoke.
Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur,
you have the Nom Loi Kablu Aleichem, right? In El Ezker, yeah. I don't know, you have it a lot, but yeah, you have
Hashem, yeah.
You have it here and there. Yeah. Okay. Right. No, when you're quoting Tzukim, of course, but I'm saying also you have it in Lashon Chazal over there, you have it in El Ezker of a Nom Loi Kablu Aleichem Tzedekim Yedidim. Yeah, it's Lashon Noom. Okay. So Namti Loi Leben Azai. So Rav Yonasan says, I said to Ben Azai, Laman, like this. Let's look at this pasuk nefesh kisiga b'chol tameh again. Lamanu nivlas behema tahora shematamo. We know that the nevela of a domestic kosher animal is matameh, and we know that because you have the original pasuk that we quoted, b'chiyomus mina behema shehi lachem la'achla, that if an animal of the type that you're allowed to eat dies, then anybody who touches its nevela becomes tameh. So we know from that if a cow dies without shchita, then its nevela is matameh. We also know the nivlas behema tmeya shematamo. We also know that a behemoth tmeya, if it dies, is also matameh. That we know from the pasuk nefesh kisiga b'chol tameh, because it mentions there behemoth tmeya. And we also know nivlas chaya tmeya shematameh. We also know that a dead carcass of a chaya tmeya, for example, a lion, is matameh, because again, the pasuk mentioned oibel nivlas chaya tmeya. So three out of the four cases we know. Nivlas chaya tahora lo lamanu, minayin. We don't know. Where do we know exactly that the nivela of a chaya tahora, for example, a deer, that if a dead deer that wasn't shechted, That it's metame. Yeah, you find roadkill on the highway, and then you touch it, you become tame. How do we know that?
Why do we need three for the behemoth tameya?
We don't. We need you have behema and you have chaya, and you have tohora and you have tameya. So you have four possibilities: behema tameya, chaya tameya, behema tohora, and chaya tohora. Behema tameya and chaya tameya we have from the pasuk and parashas Vayikra. Behema tohora we have from Shmini. Chaya tohora we don't have a pasuk. Chaya tohora we don't have a pasuk for. So where do we get it from? Normally, he tells me, well, you have the pasuk called Holech HaKapa B'chol HaChaya HaElechet. Any creature that walks on its paws among all the chayas that walk. So therefore, so that includes any kind of chaya. That their bodies are matami. Namti loy, so Rav Yonason continues, I said to him, V'chinema B'chol HaChaya. Doesn't say B'chol HaChaya. It says B'chol HaChaya. V'alo V'nema Ela B'chol HaChaya. On the face of it, that pasuk is teaching us this that Rabbi Yitzchak really was saying about an unborn. No, Rabbi Yonah.
Bichol, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So they say bichol inside. Yeah. And Rabbi Yitzchak really is using it for to learn about an uber tome that if the person touches it, it becomes tome. Yeah.
You can't use it for both.
Wow, you can't use one pasuk for two lamodim. No, unless you have an extra word or an extra letter or whatever in there. Numbly. So he says to me, okay, Uma Yishmael Oimer B'Davar Azeh. Okay, so new. What is Yishmael, meaning the famous Rabbi Yishmael? What does he have to say about this? At this point in the conversation, Ben Azai didn't know how great Rabbi Yishmael was. Later on in the conversation, after it continues, he learns that. In fact, you have an expression in the Gemara, I think in Brachas, where Ben Azai says, Kol Chachmei Yisrael Dormin like Klippas Hashum Chutz Min HaKerei HaZeh. It's like all the Chachmei Yisrael are like a garlic peel to me, like they're nothing compared to me, except for this Kereach. Who is the Kereach? It means Rashi says over there, actually it means Rabbi Akiva. Tosfos, or one of the Rishonim discusses over there, maybe it means Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Anyway, the point is that as far as Ben Azariah was concerned, Rabbi Shmuel was not anywhere near his level, so he just called him Yishmael. Anyway,
why do you think so high of himself?
Because the fact is, he was a brilliant Talmud Chacham, and a person has to know his Madriga. In other words, he meant I can very easily refute it. Yeah, in fact, you have even much later. You find a couple of hundred years later, Abaya sometimes says on himself, "Hareini kimen azay b'shukit Tveria." That when Abaya is in a good mood, he says, "I feel now like Ben Azay was when he's walking around the streets of Tveria. That any challenge you bring me in Torda, I can answer it." So, okay. Anyway, fine. So what does Yishmael say about it? Namtiloi, so because he had exactly because Rabbi Yonason was a Talmud of Rabbi Shmuel, so what does your Rebbe say about it? Namtiloi, so Rabbi Yonason says, I said to him, the pasuk that we quoted before, Chiyomus mina behema, zu behema tmeya, asher hilochem la'ochlo, zu behema tahora. That pasuk that we thought teaches us only about the behema tahora, we actually break it up. You have one part that says, Chiyomus mina behema, if a behema dies, that part refers to a behema tmeya. And then when it continues, that the kind that you can eat, that refers to a behemoth tahora. So therefore, the kind of animal that you would have been allowed to eat, namely a cow. But if it dies without shvita, then it's mekamen. So therefore you have the behemoth tmeya and the behemoth tahora in the pasuk over there. The question was we were asking how we know a nivlas chaya tahora. But the point is, continues Rabbi Yonason, Rabbi Shmuel explained, "Lamadnu chaya b'chlal behema or behema b'chlal chaya." We can also learn, as we're going to go on to develop how that the word chaya, that chaya, wild animals, can sometimes be included under the term behema. The term behema has a narrow meaning domestic animals, but it has a wider meaning animals in general, so it can include wild ones, or behema b'chlal chaya, and also the other way around, that sometimes the word chaya the word chaya also has a double meaning. It can mean a narrow meaning a wild animal, like a deer, but it can also mean a wider meaning, a living creature. So therefore, also behemoth b'chlal chaya. Sometimes the word chaya can also include behemoth. Therefore, chaya tahora b'chlal behemoth tahora. Therefore, the word behemoth tahora can also include chaya tahora. And chaya tmeya b'chlal behemoth tmeya. And when it says behemoth tmeya, it can also, the word behemoth can
be,
sort of. And we're going to see examples soon how they're interchangeable. But that's so Rabbi Yonatan tells Ben Azai, that is how my Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel, learned that the nevela of a Chaya Tahora is Mekameh, even though you don't have it said explicitly in the Pasuk. Since you have the Pasuk mentioned over here, Zubah, since you have a Pasuk that refers to a Behemah Tahora, Chaya Bechla Behemah, and therefore the Chaya Tahora is included as well.
Since you have a
pasuk that mentions that a behemoth tahora is metamei when it's dead, and sometimes we find that chaya b'chlal behemoth, therefore automatically the chaya tahora is included. And he continues, behemoth tmeya b'chlal chaya tmeya, behemoth tahora b'chlal chaya tahora. So therefore, by the same thing when it comes to the tamei one, the word chaya tmeya can also sometimes include behemoth tmeya. And Chaya Tahora can be included or the other way around, Behemoth Tahora can be included in the category of Chaya Tahora. So once it says that a Behemoth Tmeya and a Behemoth Tahora are Metame, and it also says that a Chaya Tmeya is Metame, then therefore it covers all our bases. Whether you say Chaya B'chlal Behemoth, which sometimes we do, or whether you say Behemoth B'chlal Chaya, either way you're covered,
Behemoth Tahora. And it includes
when it says Tmeya. No, one second. It has to say Tmeya and Tahora separately. Tmeya and Tahora are not included one in the other. But when it says Behemoth Tahora, that can also include Chaya Tahora, because the word Behemoth can be used in the general sense of animals, which includes wild animals. And vice versa, if it says that a Chaya Tmeya is Metame, or even if a Chaya Tmeya, then it can also include a Behemoth Tmeya. So therefore, there's because Chaya B'chlal Behema and Behema B'chlal Chaya, because both the word Chaya and the word Behema have a specific meaning and a general meaning. So when it says that a Behema Tmeya is Metame, that can be the generic meaning of the word Behema. Therefore, it includes the Chaya Tahora as well. And when it says that a Chaya Tmeya is Metame, then it can also include the Behema Tmeya.
We see that because we're going to show examples soon
how we see that Chaya B'chlal Behema and Behema B'chlal.
First, all
we have so far is Rabbi Yonatan has explained to Ben Azai the reason why we know that Chaya Tahora is Metame is we're not learning it from your pasuk Kol Holecha Kafla, because that B'chol HaChaya is being used for Rabbi Yosef Agrivi Drasha. It has to be that we're learning it from the fact that since it mentions v'chiyomus mina behema shehilacham la'ochla, and we have the behema tahora over there, that automatically includes the chaya tahora. By the way, the Gir says we have it in the Gemara over here is that Rabbi Yonatan is quoting Rabbi Shmuel, learning the pasuk, breaking the pasuk into two parts, just like we did for the Chachamim at the beginning of the Sugya, right after the Mishnah. That one part refers to a behemoth tmeya and one part refers to a behemoth tahora. However, Marashah points out that actually in Yalkut Shimoni, where it brings us to Rasha, it doesn't break that up like that. It just says that the whole pasuk refers to behemoth tahora. And the Marashah says, in fact, in the context of what we're talking about over here, we don't even really need it. It's not important whether the pasuk is talking about a behemoth tmeya. That behemoth tmeya is tomei, we anyway know, because behemoth is included in chaya, and anyway, because we have another pasuk that says oimen nivlas behemoth tmeya. So really the key thing is that we have a pasuk over here referring to a behemoth tahora and chaya b'chlal behemoth. V'chaloshen azeh omoli, so Rabbi Yonatan tells that they're telling over the story, what happened between him and Ben Azai. So Ben Azai says to me, using these words, chaval al Ben Azai shalosh shimish es Rabbi Shmuel. What a pity on Ben Azai that he never studied under Rabbi Shmuel. In other words, now all of a sudden he realizes how great Rabbi Shmuel is. And therefore he's saying, what a pity that I didn't learn under him, because I would have learned a lot from him. Talmud actually says, hefsed b'chabalei ba'olam. It's a great loss and it's a great damage to the world. Talmud vosik kamosi ani ben Azai, such an ibur gegebener, so such a devoted student like me ben Azai, shalishimashki es Rabbi Shmuel, that I never learned by Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yonatan was Rabbi Shmuel's Rebbe. Ben Azai wasn't. We were just saying before. Ben Azai had called him Yishmol without even Reb, because he didn't realize how great he was. Now he realizes for the first time how great he is, so he's saying, what a pity.
Did they live in the same place?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, Rabbi Shmuel, it actually mentions some place that Rabbi Shmuel lived all the way in the south of Eretz Yisrael, almost near Edom or something. So it could be maybe Ben Azai figured all the years it's not worth schlepping out over there to learn from him or whatever, but now all of a sudden he realizes what he lost by it. It actually mentions, by the way, over here, that whenever you have the word chaval, that's literally what it means, chaval of a hefzeru. It's a great damage and a great loss that such and such didn't happen. Okay. So, Chaya b'chlal behem. So let's go into details over here. Let's drill down. Chaya b'chlal behem menola. And where do we see that the word behema can also include chaya? That the word behema, in other words, has the generic meaning of animal. Just because you have a pasuk that says like this. Zois ha-behema asher techelu. These are the behema that you're allowed to eat. Sher seksovim b'behema. You have cattle, you have sheep, etc. But then the next pasuk continues, ayol sviva yachmu v'gomer. The ayol, which is the whatever the exact translations of them are, the gazelle and the deer and the whatever the point is. Those are all wild animals and they're still included under zoysa behema. So you see that behema includes chaya. Okay, tzad chaya b'chol behema. So what does that mean? Obviously, it must mean the word behema has a generic meaning and chaya is included in it. Behema b'chol chaya menola. And how do we know the other way around? That the word chaya can also have a general meaning of something living, and therefore behema can be included in it. Just it, because you have in Parashas Shemini, zoysa chaya asher techelu mikol behema asher la'aretz. These are the chaya that you can eat from among all the behemoths that are on the ground. Kol mafreses paros, to anyone that has split hooves and chew its cud. So it starts out with zoysa chaya, and then it continues mikol behema. Okay, so behema b'chol chaya. So therefore, obviously, the word chaya must be able to include behema as well.
Chaya is included in behema, and behema is included in chaya.
So, and the point is, so what are some practical examples where are some practical examples of this interchangeability where we say the chaya b'chol behema and behema b'chol chaya? So for example, chaya tahor b'chol behema tahor l'simanim. So for example, when it comes to how do we know what are the kosher wild animals like deer, because they have the same, they're included in the category of behema tahora as far as simonim. So the simonim that the Torah says a behema has to have to be kosher, split hooves and truest blood, that apply to a chaya as well, a deer. So therefore we see that chaya, there's a practical example of chaya being included in a behema. Chaya tzmeya b'chol behema tzmeya. Where do you have an example of chaya tzmeya being included in the category of behema tzmeya? An example would be laharba. An example would be as far as crossbreeding animals. Namely, where do we know the whole concept that you're not allowed to crossbreed animals? The positive is behemta chol sabiyakilayim. You're behema. You're not allowed to crossbreed across species. But yet it applies to chaya as well. So we see therefore chaya must be included in behema.
The crossbreeding applies to both.
Yes, and we know that we have one pasuk that mentions generically behem tachalay sabiyak kalayim. You have another one that mentions specifically loisachrish v'shur v'chamur yachdov. You know, like a plow with an ox and a donkey together. So we know it applies both to kosher and non-kosher species. Once we say that it applies to behema, it also applies to chaya, and therefore it also applies to a chaya tzmeya. If you were to crossbreed, because we just said chaya b'chol behema, and here we have an example where among tamei species, chaya tzmeya is b'chol behema tzmeya. When it says behema tzmeya, such as a donkey, it also includes chaya tzmeya, such as a lion. So if you were to crossbreed, for example, a lion and a tiger, then you would be over on the issue of Havah.
Even though they're both two
chaya tzmeya. Chaya b'chol behema. Because chaya b'chol behema, that's what we're saying. Okay. Behema tzmeya, and again, I mean, for each one of these, we're only bringing one example. For each one of them, you could bring many examples. But
right.
They're just bringing one, to prove the point. Behema tzmeya b'chol chaya tzmeya. Where do you find that behema tzmeya is included in the category of chaya tzmeya? That would be l'chidur Rebbe. That would be when we look at Rebbe's Gzeira Shava. D'tanya, we learn in a braisa like this. Going back to the pasuk nefesh kisiga b'chol tamei, we mentioned we had in there three types of things that could make a person tamei. We said the nevela of a chaya tzmeya, the nevela of a behema tzmeya, and the nevela of a sheretz tamei. Okay, shut up the whole category of its own. We're not getting into that. We're focusing on over here chaya and behema. So we learn in a bright. So Rebbe Omer, Ekra ani chaya. We could have just said in the pasuk that we're trying to show that you have an example where behema tmeya is included in chaya tmeya. That when the pasuk says chaya tmeya, it doesn't only narrowly mean, for example, lions and tigers and bears. It also means donkeys and horses and chazerim and so forth. So how do you know that? Okay. the Tanya Rebbe Omer, Ekra Ani Chaya, in that pasuk Nefesh Kisiga B'chol Tomei, it could have only said Chaya Tmeya, because after all, there's no difference in Tumah V'Tahara between a dead Chaya Tmeya and a dead Behemoth Tmeya. Behema Lama Nemra, so why does it say Behemoth Tmeya over here? We're using it for a Gzeira Shavah. Nemra Kan Behemoth Tmeya, V'Nemra Lahalan Behemoth Tmeya. In this pasuk, which this pasuk nefesh ki siga b'chol tamei, the context of it is talking about that if a person were to touch it and become tamei, and later on they eat kodshim or go into the Beis Hamikdash b'shogeg, then they will be chayav a korban oil of a yorin. So Rebbe is saying, how do we know? On the face of it, when it says nefesh ki siga b'chol tamei, maybe siga means touching. Nefesh kisiga b'chol tamei, so maybe it means just that he touches it, and then let's say he touches truma, and maybe then he's chayav a korban olav yerid for that. How do we know that it's not just touching, it means that he actually has to eat, and that it means not truma, but rather kodshim? So that we know. Nefesh kisiga b'chol tamei obviously means that he touched it and became tamei. But then when the pasuk continues, how do we know that means, because he touched them, how do we know that it means that when does he chayav the korban oil of the yored? Only if then he goes and eats kodshim or goes into the Beit Mikdash, maybe it would be even if he only touches kodshim, or maybe even if he only touches truma. Truma is sometimes called kodesh in Chumash, so maybe when it says over here that he has something to do with kodesh, maybe it means truma. So Rebbe says no, because of this Zera Shah. Nemr kan behemoth tmeya, v'nemr lahalan behemoth tmeya. Here we have in the pasuk behemoth tmeya, which is not necessary, because like we just said, chaya tmeya automatically can include behemoth tmeya. There is our proof, by the way, that behemoth tmeya is included in chaya tmeya. But we have the word behemoth tmeya over here. And then you have another pasuk, in Parashat Tzav, that also mentions behemoth tmeya. Namely, when it says that in Parashat Tzav, if a person touches anything, any kind of tumah, a tumah of a person or behemoth tmeya, and then he eats kodshim, then he gets kares. When it was b'mezid, that is. So therefore, we have a gzeira shavah. Ma lahalan tumas kodesh, just like over there in Parashat Tzav, what do we mean? What did he do after he touched the dead behemoth tmeya? He ate kodshim, b'mezid, and therefore the pasuk is saying he's chayav kares. When we summer, Akan Tumas Kodesh, the same thing when it describes in Parashas Vayikra, when it's talking about the Korban Ola V'Yored, and it says he touched a behemoth, a nevela of a behemoth mayor, means specifically, what did he do afterwards? He ate kodshin, and maybe he ate kodshin. So it would be the same thing. So the point is, we see that the pasuk in Parashas Vayikra, in the pasuk Nefesh Kisiga B'chol Tomei, did not have to mention Behemoth Tmeya. Why? Because Behemoth Tmeya B'chol Chaya Tmeya. Once it said B'nivlas Chaya Tmeya, automatically that would include any non-kosher species, including domestic or wild, because Chaya has the generic meaning of anything living. So therefore, we have the word Behemoth Tmeya for Rebbe Zera Shava to teach us when he bring the korban over the yored if he became tamei and then ate kodshim. Nothing less than that. Not touching kodshim, not eating or touching truma.
Just ate it.
Only ate and only kodshim.
Eating includes touching.
Not necessarily. Somebody could stick it into his mouth on a stick.
And then he would have thought that...
Never mind that. No. The point is, we might have thought... No, he's already told me. We might have thought that when the pasuk is telling us that a person has to bring a korban olav yored when they became tamei, maybe it means that they became tamei and then they were matame truma or they were matame kodshim just by touching it.
Right.
How do we know that it only applies to eating and only kodshim, not truma? We know that from the Zeta Shabbat. So the other half of the Gzeira Shavah is referring to eating kodshim, because there it says specifically that he touched a behemoth tmeya and then he ate from the Zevach HaShlom.
So that excludes truma.
So there, because Zevach HaShlom is not truma, right? Yeah. Okay, so there, but the point is, there we have an example where behemoth tmeya b'chol chaya tmeya, because otherwise the word behemoth tmeya in the pasuk wouldn't be extra and it wouldn't be available for this Gzeira Shavah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Last example. Behemoth Tahora b'chol Chaya Tahora. Where do we see that Behemoth Tahora is included under the category of Chaya Tahora? We have an example of that. Yitzira. As far as the fact that the word Yitzira is used in Ma'aseh Bereishis to describe them. Namely, when it says, you have like this. In Parshas Bereishis, So it describes, so in Perek Aleph, it goes through day by day, the 6 days of creation. Then in Perek Beis, it goes into some, it explains some more details about different things. We learned earlier in the Masechta, for example, that in Perek Aleph, it says that Hashem created the birds from the, that Hashem created the birds from the water. And then in Perek Beis, it says that he created them from the dirt. And he said that putting them together means he created them from the mud. And therefore, they only need one simon. So you have in Perek Beis, there are various details that are given to explain things in Perek Aleph. To clarify, to give further details. So one of them is, so it mentions in Perek Beis, it says, Vayister Hashem alekim min ha'adam kochayet ha'sadir v'gayim. It says that Hashem, Vayister, that he formed from the ground all the wild animals of the field. And then the composite continues, they brought them to Adam to name them. Why is that relevant? So that, why is it relevant to know that the word Yisira is mentioned by them? That's relevant for the following din. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Nida, Hamapelos min behema v'chaya v'oif, if a woman who was pregnant miscarries and gives birth to something that looks like a behema or a chaya or a bird, vein tmei and vein tahorin, whether they look like a kosher species or whether they look like a non-kosher species, either way, is she tamei later? Does she have the usual rules of being tamei for a certain amount of time after the birth and then tahor for a certain amount of time after that? Dam Torah after that. So, im zocher, if the creature is male, if it has male organs, teisha v'zocher, then she sits the number of days of Tumah and Tahara as if she had given birth to a regular boy. So in other words, you would have 7 days when she's Tumah, whether she's bleeding or not, and another 33 days when even if she's bleeding, it's called Dam Torah and she's mutter to her husband. Im nekeva, and if the creature is female, if it has female organs, teisha v'nekeva, then she does the same thing for the amount of time for a girl, 14 days of truma and 66 days of dam toyar.
For a male is
33. It's 33, and for a girl, 66. Yeah, everything is doubled. Okay. Yeah, everything is doubled, yes. Eina yadua, what happens if you don't know what sex this deformed baby was?
Nothing.
Not nothing. Teisha v'zachar v'nekeva. Then she has to do for a zocher and for an akeva, divrei Rav Meir, which would mean, in other words,
she's not a zocher.
She miscarried something. It has a tzuras behema chayev ha'oif, but when we look between its legs, we don't see it. It's a tumtum. No. We have a suffix. It's either a zocher or an akeva. Therefore, or for example, no. Because, first of all, it could be an androgynous or chumtum, but besides that, also another case where any adua could be, for example, let's say where the whatever she miscarried got lost before we had a chance to check it. So it was either a boy or a girl. The point is, you have a suffix.
Right.
The Rav Meir says teisha v'zachar v'nekeva. What she actually has to do is she has to combine together the dinim of a male and a female. So therefore, she has the tumor for 14 days as if she had given birth to a girl. 14 days of Tumah, as if she had given birth to a girl, and only 26 days of Dam Torah, as if it was a boy.
Oh.
Because, in other words, if it was definitely a boy, she'd have 7 days of Tumah, 33 of Dam Torah. And then after that, she goes back to the regular thing that when she bleeds, she's a Nidor or a Zava, as the case may be. If it was a girl, it'd be 14 and 66, and then she'd go back to normal. Because we're not sure, we only have 40 days to work with, and after those 40 days, she goes back to being possibly a Nidor or a Zava again. However, within those 40 days, you have to consider what if it was a girl and what if it was a female, and therefore she has to have 14 days of tumor. So she ends up with 14 days of tumor and 26 days of power.
What can you do make the worst, harder one, which is a female, and that covers everything?
Because it doesn't, because then it would mean, what happens if she bleeds, let's say, on the 41st day or the 50th day or whatever? If you were to say it's definitely a girl, she would be taller, because that's Dam Torah, it's during the 66 days. But if you say it was a boy, If you say it was a boy, then no. At that point, she's out of her 40 days already. There's no more Dam Torah. Any bleeding that she has, is nidir, that she has, is nidir or zava.
That's a different cycle.
Yeah.
How long is the Dam Torah for a boy and a girl?
So that's the thing. For a boy, you have 7 days of tumor, and the next any bleeding that happens during the next 33 days is called Dam Torah.
So that's 40 days.
So that's 40 days total.
For a girl, 40 days.
No, so the Dam Torah is 33 days out of the 40.
3 days out
right.
of the 40.
And then after that, any bleeding that she has after that is regular Dam Nida or Dam Ziva, depending when in her cycle it is. Right.
Okay. And for a girl
it's 14 and 66. So in other words, as far as the initial Yemei Tumah, for the initial Yemei Tumah, it's more of a chumra if you consider it a girl, because she has 14 days of Tumah as opposed to 7. But as far as the Dam Tohar, it's more of a chumra if we consider it a boy, because you only have Dam Tohar until 40 days after the birth, as opposed to for a girl, you would have had 8. So here, what you have to do is you have to combine the two chumras, and therefore she winds up, there's only 40 days to work with, and out of those 40, 14 of them she's coming. When we get into Masechta Nidah, Bez Hashem, we'll have many, many such cases, and Bez Hashem will bring in charts and whatever and more.
For a girl, it's 14 days and
66. And 66.
66.
And for a boy, it's 7 and 33.
So when you have a suffix here...
So when you have a suffix, then you have to have 14 days of Tumah as if it was a girl.
As if it was a girl.
But you only have till the end of 40 days of Yemei Tohar, of Dam Tohar, as if it was a boy.
Why?
Which, because that's it. Because again, after the 40 days, what if it was a boy? If it was a boy, then there's no Dam Tohar after 40 days.
It was a girl.
But it may have been, but it may not have been. So she has a suffix.
So...
of course. Yeah.
So
that's what it means. So therefore, if she bleeds on the 41st day, is she mutter to her husband or not? If it was a girl, then she would be mutter to her husband, because it's still within the days of Dam Tohar. If it was a boy, then she's not mutter to her husband.
Uh-huh.
So yeah.
So machmir means
that's the point.
Dam
so that's we can't consider it Dam Tohar after 40 days. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And by the way, this is the kind of thing. This is the kind of thing. The Rambam explains. So nowadays we don't do the dinim of Nida, or we don't count the days of Nida or Zava like the way it was originally in the Torah. And part of the reason is because you ended up with such confusion with these kinds of situations where you have spaces that you don't know, you can't be sure where you are in your cycle.
So today we have a whole different ways of doing it.
The regular count that a woman does follows the chumras of Nida and the chumras of Zava. Dam Tohar, that Amma mentions that in his times most Jewish communities already didn't do Dam Tohar, although he says there was still some that did, but eventually nowadays I think it's pretty much universal that nobody does. So yeah. In general, any bleeding that comes, any blood that comes from a woman's uterus, she becomes talmid. Because it's hard to be sure whether it's Dam Nida or Dam Zava or Dam Tohar or what have you.
Dam Zava, she would do what?
So Dam Zava, she'd have to wait. See, it depends whether it was 1, 2, or 3 days. We'll get to that in the second. Okay, you know what? Now is not the place to get into it in detail. In Masechta Erchin, we'll talk about it some, Bezus Hashem. And in Masechta Nidah, we'll talk about it until it's coming out of your ears. So, Palka, let's continue over here. Okay. So, all of this is Divrei Rav Meir. All of this is according to Rav Meir. That point is she miscarried this creature that looks like an animal or a bird. It's still considered as if it was a regular human baby, and she still has the regular days of Tumah V'Tahara. And only if it was a suffix, whether it was a boy or a girl, do we have this in-between situation. The Chachamim Omrim, the Chachamim say no. Kol She'enim Tzuras Adam, anything that does not have the Tzura of a person, the form of a person, Eino Vlad, is not considered a Vlad, and you wouldn't have Yemei Tohar, and you wouldn't have Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tohar. In other words, the point is that according to the mayor, why is she Tome, why does she have the regular days of Tumah V'Tahara for this deformed thing that looks like a behemoth or a chayah or a oif? Because they're described with the word Yetzirah that is also used as far as human beings. Earlier in Perek Beis, in Parashas Bereishis, it also says, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim min ha'adama, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim min ha'adam. So the same word, Vayitzer, is used about human beings and about behemoth, chayah, or oif. About Chayav Oif specifically. It doesn't mention Behemoth in the Pasuk over there. That's the point. Nevertheless, Rav Meir is saying the same din would apply if the thing came out looking like a cow. It doesn't say Behemoth in the Pasuk. Behemoth B'chlal Chayav. That's the point we're trying to establish.
No, I understand. Okay. But it's neither a cow nor a human being.
That's the point. Rav Meir says it doesn't matter. Whether it looks like a human being, or whether it looks like a cow, or whether it looks like a bird, or whether it looks
anything.
Like, yeah, anything, well, Behemoth Chayav or Oif. Either way, it has enough resemblance to a person insofar as both people and Chaya and Ois are all described with the same word, Vayitzer, that therefore it would be considered human as far as the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. The Chum disagree with that. The Chum say it has to have Surah Adam, it has to have something of the form of a person. So you see an example where behemah b'chol chaya, because the pasuk mentions over there that Hashem created chaya sasada and oif hashamayim, and yet Rav Meir is saying the same didn't would apply if it looked like a behemah as well. So we see that behemah b'chol chaya.
Well, that's just her name.
Okay, so the question is, hold on. Ulurabbanon haikro lamali. So that one second. According to Rashi, According to Rashi, the Gemara is actually not taking up now the question, what would the Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Meir do with
this?
Think about this. Tosfos learns that way. Tosfos learns that this Ula Rabbanon is asking. This that we say over here, Ula Rabbanon, Hai Kro Lomali, what are we using this pasuk for? Tosfos says that the question is on the Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Meir. They actually have a different girsa over here. The girsa that we have over here, Ula Rabbanon, Hai Kro Lomali, is Rashi's girsa. So first, let's start with, Tosfos has a different girsa, Hanicha l'Rav Meir, that this is good according to Rav Meir, where he has an example of Chaya b'Chlal Behema, El Rabbanon Ma'ik l'Behema, according to the Rabbanon, where do you have an example of Chaya b'Chlal, of Behema b'Chlal Chaya? And the answer would be that they would say, the answer would be, as the Gemara continues, actually the whole pasuk, both the part that says Chaya Tmeya and the part that says Behema Tmeya are all needed for Rebbe's din. In other words, there is an example where Behema B'chlal Chaya, but really it's the other way around. We needed Behema Tmeya for the Gzeder Shava, but once it mentions Behema Tmeya, then it also mentions Chaya Tmeya for the same reason as we said before, because often the pasuk will repeat something in order to add a detail. But you still see an example over there, according to the Rabbanon, who disagree with the Meir, they would say, fine, in the case of a woman giving birth, you don't necessarily apply this thing of Behema B'chlal Chaya, because according to them, it's not relevant whether it looks like a Behema or whether it looks like a Chaya. There's no too much later. They don't disagree with the principle because they would say the pasuk that we quoted before is all needed for Rebbe's din. Now, that's according to Tosfos. Rashi's girsa is that we're not actually asking about the Rabbanon who disagree with Rav Meir. Fine, they may disagree with Rav Meir on the actual din. They do agree. The fact of the matter is, what it says, Vayitzu Hashem alekim min ha'adama kol chayas ha'sodaveh kol oifas ha'mayim, the fact is, the behemoths were created at that point also. All of them, behemoths and chayas and oifas, were all brought to Adam to name. So therefore, Rashi learns that the Ula Rabbanon over here is going back to much earlier in the sugya. We're saying all this time we've been discussing how Rabbi Yossi Aglieli knows his din in our Mishnah, that if the unborn baby, the unborn dead baby, was from Behemoth Tmeya, that the shepherd becomes Tomei when he touches it. So all this time we've been discussing the source of Rabbi Yossi Aglieli's din. Now we're going back and asking, if Rabbi Yossi Aglieli is learning from the Pasuk Nefesh Kisiga B'chol Tomei, then what are the Rabbanon doing with that? The Rabbanon who disagree and say that whether the baby and the mother were Tomei or Tahar, either way, the shepherd is Tahar when he touches the dead unborn baby. So what are they doing with the Pasuk Onefesh? And the answer is, Kuli L'Cherebi Huda'asa, the answer is the same thing. The whole Pasuk is meant for Rebbe's Havachomer, and not Havachomer, Gzeira Shava. You have extra details in it that it mentions Chaya Tmeya and Behema Tmeya. Doesn't matter. The essential point is that Behema Tmeya was needed, and the rest of the Pasuk is just there by the way.
So it doesn't serve to prove that the Rabbanon hold by it.
So therefore, the Rabbanon can say, we disagree with Rabbi Yosef. So in other words, so according to Rashi, the question is, number here, how the Rabbanon know that Chaya B'chlal Behema? So they don't have to accept that whole point. The question is, how they know that the din is not like Rabbi Yosef Aglieli. What are they doing with Rabbi Yosef Aglieli's pasuk, where he said that from it we learn that the unborn baby of a Behema Tmeya is going to be the Talmud? And the answer is, they're using the whole pasuk for Rebbe's Drasha. So that's the point of Rashi, that we're not addressing, that's the thing. So Rashi says we're addressing the Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Yosef Aglieli. Tosfos says, first of all, why do we wait so long to bring that up? We've just been through a whole long sugya. And second of all, the fact of the matter is, we do have to ask, then in that case, why are we only asking what they would do with Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk? No, they should be asking also on what the Chachamim are doing with Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk, for Cholahoy L'Chalkafon.
We should ask.
Number one, earlier in the sugya. If we're talking about the Chachamim against Rabbi Yosef Aglieli, number one, we should have asked it earlier in the sugya. And number one, we should be asking about both sugya that Rabbi Yosef Aglieli was using. So therefore, Tosfos prefers the old girsa that the old girsa, which has actually changed, which is that the question is not on the Rabbanon who disagrees with Rabbi Yosef Aglieli. We already established where they know those things from a Kal Vachomer. But rather, the Rabbanon who disagrees with Rabbi Meir, where do they see that Chaya B'chlal Behema? And the answer is because the pasuk is teaching us Rebbe's din, and therefore we say that the pasuk is teaching us Rebbe's din, Rebbe's Zera Shava, And they do agree with that. They do agree with that. That's fine. So therefore we have an example. We're chayav b'chol behema. Where you know the pasuk mentions behema tmeya, and yet the same din applies if a person touches or the other way around. The pasuk mentioned chayav tmeya, and then it didn't need to mention behema tmeya except for gzeira shava. So therefore we see that behema is b'chol chaya. That's with tmeya, and once we have that, it's the case with tmeya, then it can also be the case with tahor.
So this understanding agree with from that example.
Well, they agree with Rebbe's example. No, they disagree with Meir's example as far as the woman giving birth. But they would agree with Rebbe's din that he learned from his Gzeira Shava about that when a person becomes Tameh, that only if they eat Kodshim are they chayav for a korban or enter the Beis Mikdash, are they chayav for a korban olav yorah, that he's learning from the Gzeira Shava from the words behemah tmeah. They'll agree with that.
How does the last one go?
Rabbanon High Kralam. The point is that Rabbanon, what are we doing with this pasuk? And the answer is Kuli L'Chidur Rebbe. Also, the whole pasuk is teaching us Rebbe's din. So according to Rashi, the Rabbanon we're referring to are the Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Yosef Glivi in our Mishnah. And according to Tosfos, it's the Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Meir on the case of the Yoledet.
This last case.
Yeah. Because Tosfos said, first of all, why would it have waited so long? We've just spent a whole omer and a half dealing with Rabbi Yitzhak Levi's Shita. Why only at the end now are we asking what would the Rabbanon say against him? And number two, why is it not asking about both psukim that he used? We said in the course of the sugya that Rabbi Yitzhak Levi needs two psukim. One b'chol ha'olach ha'kapav, that walks on all four, and two, nefesh kisiga. And the Gemara is only asking on the one, so therefore that's why Tosfos says we're not asking on them, we're asking on the Rabbanon who disagrees with the mayor about the case of the Yoledet.
What would they ask on the second one?
According to Rashi, it should have.
What would they ask according to Rashi?
What are they doing with that puzzle again? All right, since we've been talking about animals giving birth and unborn babies in the wombs of animals, so now we're going to digress a second and talk about a similar but not similar din in the case of human beings. We said just now in the previous Mishnah that with an animal, if you touch the baby while it's in the womb, you don't become Tameh, except according to Rabbi Yitzhak Levi, if it's a non-kosher species. But human beings are different. So the Mishnah says, "Ha'isha shemes v'lada b'seich me'ah." If a woman's baby died in the womb, "O pashta chayes yodav nagabai," and the midwife stuck her hand in and touched the baby inside the womb, "Chayes me'ah tumas shiva." What will happen is the midwife will be tamei for 7 days because she touched a dead body. "V'ha'isha tahorad sheyesav lad." The mother herself will be tahor until the baby comes out, for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. Basically, the idea is, so you have, it's going to be important to understand for our Gemara two concepts. Number one, you have a concept called maga beis haktorin. We know that if a person touches something that's tamei, then they become tamei. However, that only applies if they touch it with some exposed part of their body, their finger, their arm, their leg, their whatever, anything. I think even the tongue counts as exposed for that purpose. I don't remember exactly. But for example, if let's say a person were to stick of something tamei on a skewer, on a long stick, and stick it down somebody's throat, so it touches the inside of their throat, they wouldn't become tamei from it, unless it's a nivlas oiv tahor, which is a zeres hakasuv, but otherwise they wouldn't become tamei. That's called maga beis haktorim, where they touched it with some inner hidden part of their body. Another example, which is relevant for our purpose over here, is that the mother is touching the baby, but it's inside the womb, and therefore she doesn't become tamei from it. That's called maga beis
haktorim.
No, we're talking about the baby is all inside the womb. The mother is carrying the baby in her womb.
Right.
She's not becoming tamei from it because it's called maga beis haktorim. She's only touching it with a hidden part of her body. There's no exposed part of her body. There's no outside of her body that is touching that baby.
And therefore she's not tamei.
That's called maga beis haktorim. Second of all, you have a concept which we're going to be dealing
if
with.
If blood comes out,
that's another matter. She can be tamei tumas nida. We're talking about tumas mes over here. We're dealing with tumas mes so far. Wait. Then you have another concept called tuma blua. When you have a tumor that is swallowed up inside the body of a person, we'll talk about soon the case of Samid Postel, but you also have a case where tumor is inside a person, for example, or inside an animal, where also it's not metamic. Mm-hmm. So those are two concepts that we're going to be dealing with in the sugya over here. Okay. So Omer Rabba, the Gemara says, Kishem Shetuma Blua Enimatama. just as a tumor bluer, a tumor that is swallowed up inside a person's body, is not metame. Is not metame something else?
Share it. You don't touch it.
Well, so we're gonna give example. We're gonna give examples soon. An example would be a sheriff, I guess, sure. But an easier example, which the Gemara is going to use, is, for example, a person eats a piece of a nevela of an animal. So the nevela, so it's not matame him, right? So it's not matame him. So kashem shetuma blua ain't a matama. Just as a swallowed up tumor is not matame, tara blua ain't a matama. So also when you have, for example, something that is tahor and is swallowed inside the body, cannot become tame. Meaning, Rashi gives an example. Let's say, for example, a person swallowed a ring, which is tahor, and then he went into an oil mess. He himself becomes tameh, but the ring, which is inside him, remains tahor. Because also it's a tahor blua. So Rabbi is saying, just as something that is blua would not be able to be tameh, the person.
We just said that something tameh inside of something tahor does not make that a person tameh. This thing of the ring.
The ring is tahor. Therefore, yeah. It can't become tameh from the oil ames the person is in.
But no, that's just the other way around. The oil, the in the oil ames, the person becomes tameh from the outside, right?
That's fine. Rabbah is telling us that the same rule that applies to tumah blua, that it's not metameh, anything outside of it, it doesn't pass through the person's body to be metameh, anything outside, and it's not even metameh him, the same thing vice versa. So first let's establish tumah blua menolon. Where do we know the concept of tumah blua not being metame, which Rabbah is saying just as that, so also the other case. So let's just see, because you have a pasuk like this. The pasuk says a person eats from a nevela of an animal, then he has to wash his clothes in the mikveh, meaning he becomes tameh and his clothes become tameh. So he has to go to the mikveh, he has to put his clothes in the mikveh, and he has to have hair of shemesh. Now, when you think about it, he becomes tameh because he picked it up and ate it. But wait, okay, one second. The point is like this. Rashi actually explains like this. When we say that, we were saying that maga beis astorim is not metameh, but noise in beis astorim is. So noise in carrying. So when the person, in other words, yes, the person's not going to become tameh from the piece of nevela touching the inside of his mouth or the inside of his throat, because that's beis astorim. But eventually, when he swallows it, he's carrying it around inside his body. That will be metameh.
When he moves, starts moving.
No, not even when he starts moving. Once it lands in his stomach, and then he's carrying it around. Carrying
from the mouth to the stomach will make him tameh.
Yep.
In the mouth.
If you were to put it in his mouth and then spit it out, he wouldn't yet be tameh. Because that's maga based astorim.
Once it lands in the stomach,
then he would then.
When it's blua means swallowed.
Yeah. One second. Okay. No. The point is, in other words, that. The point is like this: maga based astorim is not metameh, but masa based astorim is. So what happens? What happens? We're saying that the person has to go to the mikveh. Now, after he goes to the mikveh, it doesn't necessarily mean the piece that he ate isn't yet digested; it's still in his stomach. Miloyaskin and da'achol samach l'shkiyas hachama. Conceivably, you could have the pasuk could be the case could also include where he ate the piece of nevela right before shkiyah, and then he goes to the mikveh and he has head of shemesh after that. And he's the Ka'amar Rahmana Tahar, and the Pasuk is telling us he's Tahar. Now, why should he be Tahar? Don't you have the problem of Masa Beis Astorim? So the fact that we don't have that problem, it's still there, yeah, because it hasn't got digested yet, it takes time. No, that's the point. If we were to say, fine, we could say, and this is the point Rashi is saying, he doesn't become tamei from it touching the inside of his stomach because that's maga beis astorim. Fine, he ought to be tamei on the grounds of masa beis astorim because he's carrying it around in his stomach. The fact that the pasuk implies that he's tahor even in that case, as long as he went to the mikveh and had a erev shemesh, implies that tumah blua is not matame. Even though he's carrying it around in his stomach, it's not matame because it's tumah blua. So there you go.
Well, the mikra did something.
Right, that's the point. The mikra was matahar him. And once it did, then therefore the tumah doesn't come back because it's tumah. At this point, it's only tumah blua. It's only inside his stomach, and therefore it can't be matahar him anymore.
Even though it's not just yet, but it's considered the...
Yeah. In other words, again, when, okay, one second. When he ate it, he became tameh either because he touched it in the course of eating it with his hands or whatever, or if not, then he became tameh because he was masa beis hasodim, because he carried it around in his stomach.
Carried it.
Masa literally means
carried. Moved in the stomach.
Either one, I guess, or it could also be. Yeah, whatever. The point is that the weight of it is inside him. Carrying doesn't necessarily mean moving around. Carrying this means that just means that it's being held up by some part of his body. So it is being held up by his stomach, right? Okay. So at that point, he becomes tameh. However, then we're saying that when he goes to the mikveh and he has head of shemesh, then he's tameh. He doesn't become tameh again because he's still carrying around the piece of nevela inside him. Why not? Because tumah blua is not matameh. That's the point. Okay. Yeah.
It's considered blua.
It's blua because it's swallowed up in his stomach, yeah. That's the definition of blua. Yeah.
Before he went to the mikveh, it was matameh.
That's the point. He became tummy once it landed in his stomach. Because once it landed in his stomach, fine. But then.
Can you say blue or the tummy went before he went to the mikveh? It was the tummy, and after the mikveh, it's not. So blue means it's matame. It has to be, otherwise.
No. So okay. So it means again, he became tummy in the first place because it touched, for example, the outside of his mouth when you're eating it normally when you eat it.
Okay, let's say it didn't touch anything.
If it didn't touch anything, then in principle he wouldn't be tummy from it. But whatever.
How can he be tummy?
Okay. Ha'oichomenivlosa means when he's eating it in such a way that he's touching it and with the outside of his body. Yeah, when he's touching it with his hands or whatever. In fact, I think Rashi mentions on the pasuk that it doesn't necessarily literally mean that he has to eat it in order for him to be tameh, because the fact is you only have this tumas maga and this tumas masa. So if I remember correctly, Rashi actually on the pasuk says it doesn't let me see it real quick. I think Rashi says over there that actually it doesn't mean that he necessarily ate it. It means that let me see if I'm remembering that right. Yeah, Rashi brings over there from Torah's training. You would think that making it, that eating it in and of itself makes him tameh. No, only an oich tahor does that. What does it mean? Ha'oichel means it's telling us how much do you have to carry or how much do you have to touch to become tameh, a kezayis, kedei achila. So the point is, in other words, just eating it in and of itself does not make him tameh. But unless, just eating it itself, in other words, if somebody were to stick it on a stick and stick it down his throat, he would not become tameh from it, only if it was a nivlos oich tahor. If it's a nevela of an animal, which is what we're talking about over here, then not. However, normally when a person eats something tameh, he normally touches it and becomes tameh from that. So fine, he becomes...
Yeah.
So in other words, the point is, he became tameh because he touched it and picked it, because he picked it up and ate it. Forget about it being in his stomach. The fact remains, after he ate it, and after he goes to the mikveh, and after he has a head of shemesh, that piece is still in his stomach because it hasn't been digested yet.
So
why isn't it metame him again? For the fact that he's noisy, that he's carrying it. Because tumah blua is not metame. How did it become tameh in the first place? By touching it with his hand.
Okay.
So the Gemara asks, the Gemara shiny.
The only way it could become tameh
is
if he touches it with his hands, and afterwards
it
becomes tameh.
Right. So the question
agrees with that.
Yeah, it's not a question. Actually, Tosfos doesn't disagree with this, right? Yeah, Tosfos talks about other things, and this still given others, right? Okay, fine. So the question is, v'duma shiny halsim b'lechaz yilager. Okay, but maybe you could say that's a different case, because once he ate it, then in a certain sense, it can't be considered a nevela anymore. The pasuk says about a nevela, lo'tzoich l'kol nevela, l'ger asher b'sharecha titneno v'achalo. You can give a nevela to a ger, meaning a ger toshav who lives in your city. So the ger toshav only keeps the shev mitzvah tenaya. He's allowed to eat nevela. So therefore, once it's not roi for a ger anymore, then it's not really considered a nevela. So maybe that's why it's not matame him, not because of tumah blua, because it's not roi for a ger to eat. So the Gemara says, honicha l'Rav Yechanan. Now, if we're going to say that the fact of the matter is, we're saying forget about it being roi for a ger or not, you would say, Rav Yechanan would say, achas zu v'achas zu av l'kelev, whether we're talking about as far as being matame a person, whether, which is a tumah chamura, a stronger tumah, whether we're talking about only a weaker level of tumah that can only be matame kelim, that can be matame only food, rather, either way, ad l'kelev, it's still able to be matame until it's not roi l'achilas kelev. So if we go according to Rav Yechanan, fine, this piece that he swallowed is not roi for a ger anymore, because no human being is going to eat it. But if he were to spit it back up, if he were to throw it back up, a dog might conceivably eat it. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan would say it could actually still be metame, and yet we're saying it's not metame him in his stomach. Well, then good, shafir, then it's good. Then that proves that tumah blua is not metame. El labar pada, but according to bar pada, the omar tumah chamura lager, tumah kala avlekelev, where he says that there's going to be a difference in this regard between tumah chamura, which is a stronger tumah, the kind that can be matame people, meaning it being and being an ava tumah basically, versus being matame food, which is only a vlada tumah, a rishon or whatever. That bar pada would say to be matame tumah chamura, it has to be edible by a ger. To be matame tumah kala, then it can still be matame that until it's not roi lachel of kelev. So then, maybe you could say over here, mishum d'leichad y'legerhu. Maybe you could say the reason why this piece that's in his stomach is not matame him anymore is because it's not roi for a ger to eat. So how do you
say it's not for a ger to eat?
A ger toshav, in other words.
A ger toshav, what do you mean exactly?
In other words, exactly this. He ate a piece of nevela, it's in his stomach now. If he were to throw it back up, a dog might eat it, but a ger, a fellow human being, is not going to eat it. So there, and according to Bar Pada, that already takes away a degree of tumah from it. Now, at that point, that piece cannot be matame another person who touches it or carries it. The only thing is it can be matame food or drink that it touches. So according to Bar Pada,
it lost some
tumah.
It doesn't prove anything.
So therefore, that's the point. That we're trying to prove that tumah blua is not matame. According to Bar Pada, you don't really have much of a proof. The fact that already, by being blua, it lost a certain degree of tumah because not roi for a ger, how does that show in general that tumah blua is not matame?
It's just in that specific instance.
Because not roi for a ger, right? Right, but only because we're talking about a nevela, which has to be roi for a ger, right? The answer is, mihi d'lechazi b'fonav. True, it's not roi for a ger. If the ger knows that you ate it and then threw it back up, he's not going to eat it. Shaloi b'fonav, but if it's not in his presence, if a person were to throw it up and it's still intact enough to look like it had never been eaten, nechzechazi, conceivably it would be edible by a ger if he didn't know better.
And therefore, it would be
therefore, no, therefore, Bar Pada might say it is still roi for a ger.
Right.
Because conceivably, you could trick the guy basically into eating it without him knowing that it had already been eaten by somebody else. Remind me afterwards to tell you the joke about the bowl of chocolate. But anyway, so even Bar Pada would say that it still has tumah chamura. If yet, still we see, and everybody agrees to this from the implication of the pasuk, that the person himself who ate it does not become tamei from it from carrying it around in his stomach after he went to the mikveh and had a head of shemesh. That shows that tumah blua is not matame. Okay. Ashvachon tumah blua. Okay, so far that takes care of tumah blua. Now Rabba had told us the same way as tumah blua is not matame, the same thing, tahara blua, is not going to become tamei. The example that we said where a person swallowed a ring and then went into an oil mess. How do we know that? Tahara blua manola.
Wouldn't
be matame the person. You would think it would become tame because the person himself went into an oil amet and he became tame. His whole body became tame. Maybe the ring becomes tame as well. So how do we know that not? The answer is kavachomer. Uma kli cheres hamukas tamed sil. Consider you have the case of a kli cheres, which is covered with a sealed cover, where we know the Torah tells us that when you have such a thing in an oil mess, the contents of it are protected from tumah. V'chol kli cheres asha'ein alav tamid pasul is tamei, implying that if it's tamid pasul, then whatever's in it is saved from tumah.
So let's say you have a
kli cheres. So if you have a kli cheres,
you put a
tamid pasul on it, and let's say you have you have some food, let's say, in a kli cheres. You put a thumbed puzzle, you put a sealed cover onto it that's tightly attached, tight smeared on, whatever. Then you have, let's say this is inside a house. Later on, a person dies in that house. The contents in the kli cheres, and the kli cheres itself, for that matter, will remain tahor.
Because
there's a thumbed puzzle, because the seal on it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, ma kli cheres hamukar thumbed
puzzle.
No, thumbed puzzle literally means joint. Literally means attached and attached and joined. Yeah, not possible like with a samach, with a possil, with a soft, yeah. Some possible means joined and attached, basically. Sealed, yeah. You have a new set of kalim that talks about details. You can have a case with club, you can have a case with summit, but not possible, but not summit. What?
Sealed
color? It's probably related somehow, yeah. Anyway, the point is that, now on the other hand, the flip side is not true. If you have a kli cheres, suppose you have a kli cheres that has a kezias of a mess in there. Suppose that kli cheres has a tumid pasul on it. You carry that kli cheres into a room. Everything in that room will be tamei. I, the Kli Cheres, has a Tumah Tassel. The Tumah Tassel helps that Tumah won't go in from the outside. It doesn't help Tumah from, it doesn't prevent Tumah from escaping. We learn it in fact, the Kalim talks about it. I don't remember exactly, but that's the thing. So, Umah Kli Cheres Hamukh of Tumah Tassel, She'enei Masel of Tumah Shebaseichem Elakameh. A Kli Cheres, which is covered with Tumah Tassel, will not prevent the Tumah that's inside it from being Metameh, other things around it. The Omamah, and we know that because we learn it, we know that because we learn in a Mishnah, Tumah Resutza Bekas Va'ola Adla Rakia, that a Tumah that is Resutza, that's buried in the sense that there's no Oihel Tefach over it. In order for Tumah to be confined within an area, there has to be an Oihel above it of at least a Tefach by a Tefach by a Tefach. Otherwise, it's called Tumah Resutza, and the Din is the Tumah is Bekas Va'ola Adla Rakia. It goes all the way up until the Rakia. Anything above it, anything unless there's an Oihel over it, which is Tefach by Tefach by Tefach, yeah, which then the Tumah is confined within the oil. But otherwise, in other words, you could be flying 10,000 feet above, and you would still become Tumah. This, by the way, this comes up. This comes up when Kohenim are flying in planes over Beis HaKlores. Yeah, different possibilities. In some cases, actually, planes. Some cases, actually, flights have had to be rerouted because of such things. Al Al, for example, has had a number of times when they've had to when they've changed their flight plans in order to avoid local cemeteries. Goyish cemeteries are different because Kibur Goyim are not necessarily the time of oil, although the concern is more Jewish cemeteries. Anyway, besides which, I mean, many Kvarim anyway have an oil tefach in them, so whatever. Anyway, the point is, and yet this Kli Cheres Hamukh of Tumah Tassel, Maso Al Parash of Asoichim El Tameh, yet if you have something Toho inside the Kli Cheres, then it's prevented from becoming Tameh by the seal.
Inside.
That's inside. So then the other half of the Kavach Homer, Odom Shemaso Al Tumah of Asoichim El Tameh, so a person who, if he has Tumah inside him, it's not Metameh what's around him, because we just said Tumah Bluer is not Metameh, not him and not anything else. How much more so that he should prevent anything that's Tahar from inside him from becoming Tameh? Which would be the wind. If a Kli Cheres can only prevent Tumah from coming in but not going out, so then a person that can prevent Tumah from going out of his body from something that's Tameh inside him, how much more so it'll prevent the Tahar thing that's inside him, the ring, from becoming Tameh? The problem with that is malakus cheres shekain ein metame megaboy. Okay, but you could slug that up because you could say a kli cheres has. There's a reason why a kli cheres works that way, because the kli cheres, the outside of it, is not able to become tameh. If too much in general, even without a tumah tassel, if too much touches the outside of a kli cheres only, nothing happens. It's only metame from the inside. Whereas a person, it does. How could you compare that to a person? A person can become tameh from their outside. The answer is, so what? Also a non-migabe communion? So what? We're not talking about the person's outside. Mitoicha communion. We're focusing on the person's inside. We're trying to learn the inside of a person from the inside of a Kli Cheres. One second. So therefore, the person has a kula over the Kli Cheres. So we just said the person can prevent the trauma from exiting their body, whereas a Kli Cheres cannot. So therefore, right, Tosfos expands on it a little bit and says that, so the fact of the matter is, with a Kli Cheres Hamukh of Tumah Tassel, the outside of it is not a chatzitza for the Tumah. The outside of it, even though it can't become Tumah from Tumah touching the outside, but the outside doesn't prevent the Tumah from the inside from spreading outward. But a person, it does, because that's what we said. Tumah Blua is not Metameh. So how much more so then that it should prevent the thing that's Tahar inside, that the outside of the person should be able to prevent the Tumah from the outside from spreading inward and being Metameh the wind. Okay. Okay, so and therefore, Adarab, a Kli Cheres Chomer. So then, on the contrary, a Kli Cheres is more Chomer, Shekein Metameh Me'avirei, because a Kli Cheres is able to become Tameh from without something even touching it. You can have, as opposed to a person. Forget Tumah Blua. If you take something Tameh and suspend it inside a Kli Cheres, even without touching it, it becomes Tameh. But if with a person, if you suspend something Tameh inside his mouth, he doesn't become Tameh. That's not Tumah Blua, it's not swallowed up in his mouth. Yeah. No, but what we mean is there's another kula in a person over a Kli Cheres, and therefore another reason to strengthen our kabbalah.
You just suspend it in his mouth.
It's called Tumah Ba'aviroi. It's called Ba'aviroi. So a Kli Cheres, it becomes Tumah, a person it wouldn't. So that's another reason that strengthens our kabbalah chaimer to say that a Kli Cheres has less of an ability to prevent Tumah than a person does. So therefore, that's a reason to say that the Tumah, that the Tara Blua should remain Tahar, as Rabbah was saying. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, and then we'll...
This whole thing where you learned about the, I think, Sukkah, you were on vacation, then we also talked about this whole thing about the Avir of the past and the Tumah and all
right.
That.
Right. Yeah, it comes up in many places in Shas, but yeah, it did come up in the first parak of ours. This whole concept that Avir Klicheris in the family, yeah. It came up in the beginning of Amos Sefer, yeah, in the first parak, yeah. It comes up in many places in Shas.